Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to this latest edition of the Saturday Morning Wake Up Call. I'm your host, Surreal Quinn, taking you through for the next 60 minutes on this Saturday, April 10th, 2010, 9:30 in the a.m. And I wonder what must be going through the minds of a Phil Mickelson, of a Lee Westwood, a K.J. Choi, Fred Couples. I'm not going to say Tom Watson because he really doesn't have a chance to win a tournament. Ian Poulter, Anthony Kim, Y.E. Yang. What must be going through these guys' minds as we head into round three of the Masters? And because lurking in the weeds, not even lurking in the weeds, right there within two shots of the lead, despite 5 months, basically four or five months of not playing competitive golf, despite being on basically the page six for about 120 straight days, despite everything that Tiger Woods has endured over the course of that time, he finds himself just 36 holes away from another green jacket. I mean, if you had, listen, if I'm competing against Tiger Woods coming into this tournament, I would have thought that I had a pretty decent chance, pretty good chance, that he wouldn't win a tournament, but he wouldn't be really that competitive. I thought I would have a pretty good shot. Not that it was a definite shot, but I would think that he would have been just a little rusty, just a tad rusty, taking that big a layoff, having that big a layoff. But here goes Woods, shoots a 68, which is his lowest score ever at Augusta, and then comes back yesterday shooting a 70 to stay within the hunt. Two shots back of Ian Poulter and Lee Westwood, tied with, of course, Mickelson, Anthony Kim for second place, KJ Choi as well. I would have thought that, you know, I would have had a shot, considering that all the things that went on with Tiger. Maybe he's a little distracted. Maybe his focus is not always 100% there. But it's, you know, it's business as usual, basically. But to me, that's if I'm a competitive golfer, that scares me. I mean, I'm gotta be honest, that would scare me if I was a Phil Mickelson. When are we going to be able to beat this guy? What has to happen, you know, an injury withstand? Even God beat us on one leg. Even an injury, the guy beat us at a 2008 U.S. Open on one leg. What has to take place for this guy not to, for us to beat this guy, other than him not playing in a tournament due to injury like was the case a couple years ago at the British and PGA Championships? Because if he's in the tournament, we basically have no chance. And I'm ducking the fact that I have to eat some crow here. I came on the program and said Tiger Woods basically, you know, I wouldn't be worried. You know, I was shocked that he was favored. He's been out. He struggled the Masters the past couple of years as far as winning it. Not struggling in terms of... And he has struggled with the greens as well. He hasn't been able to control his driver, missing some putts. But he has his complete game going this throughout the first 36 holes, through the first two rounds of the Masters. I mean, when Tiger's going good at Augusta, two things are happening, or at any major tournament for that matter. One, he's controlling his driver, and he's keeping the ball in the fairway. And two, he's killing par fives. Those two, when those two things are happening, he's almost unbeatable. Through the first two rounds, he's 8-under on par fives. He's making enough putts, not missing easy ones. And he's taking advantage of a golf course that has not played as hard as I thought that it has played in recent years. First round, there were 31 guys under par. In the second round, there were 20. Played a little bit more difficult in the second round, but this course, I mean, listen, recently, and this has been one of my problems with Augusta, with the Masters for the past couple of years, they tried to make this course like the U.S. Open. When you see guys struggle to, you know, to break even. I mean, you see winning scores of guys going over par at the Masters, which should not be the case. I mean, that to me, I could tell they had a U.S. Open or maybe had a British Open when the winds are bad, but at the Masters, the golf course is already a star in itself as far as its, you know, aesthetic beauty. You don't have to go out there and make the course impossible to play. And they've tried to do that at Augusta. But so far this year, it's been the players that have gotten the best of this course through the first two rounds. And this, listen, I'm not going to sit up here and say that the Masters is over, you know, concede the, you know, the victory, the Tiger. But listen, I mean, he's traditionally he makes his big move on Saturdays. I mean, he's had times on Saturdays where he's been down and came back to win a Masters. I mean, this is a round. This is moving day. He normally moves up on Saturdays. Look for him to shoot in the 60s. His average round on moving day, which is today, is about 69. Look for him to shoot between a 67 and a 69, and look for him to be, I would say, at the top of the leaderboard. I expect him to be leading going into the final round come Sunday. And what we're headed towards is a Woods Mickelson showdown come Sunday afternoon on the back nine at the Masters. That's where we're headed. I understand Ian Poulter and Lee Westwood, the two leaders, have, you know, Ryder Cup experience. They have good games. Westwood has been around for a while. He's due to win one of these majors. But I just think the pressure that Woods will put on those two guys as he plays just one group, that he plays right behind them, as you'll see Woods paired up and teeing off at 235, Westwood and Poulter will tee off at 245. I think the pressure that he will put on those guys will be just too much for them to handle. It'll just be too much. I can see those guys falling back a little bit, not out of contention. But again, I'll be shocked tomorrow if Tiger Woods is not paired up with Phil Mickelson. I'll be shocked. I mean, the ratings are already going to be off the charts, considering Woods is in contention. You add Phil Mickelson to the mix, you have must-see TV tomorrow, again, all throughout the course of tomorrow afternoon, all throughout the course of the day with the Masters. I mean, even if you're not a golf fan, you have to watch that. Because I did not believe Tiger would be in contention like this a couple weeks ago. I really didn't. I was honest about it. And I'm the biggest Tiger fan as far as the golfing game goes as anybody. But I just thought that he would be too rusty to come back and compete at a major tournament at the level he's competing at. What do I know? I mean, Tiger Woods, you know, comes in and plays like he hasn't missed any time. If you have been away somewhere or under a rock, and wouldn't have known what went on, you would have known. You'd be like, okay, this is what he normally does. But again, it seems to me that he really took some pressure. Really, the pressure kind of was taken off earlier in the week kind of reception that he got received on Monday. I know he's trying to be more fan friendly. Hasn't received. I haven't heard any negative things said to him in the gallery. And again, Augusta, this is why he chose to come back to Augusta first. They're not going to tolerate that anyway. Anybody says anything and it's heard, they're going to be gone. Fans don't have nowhere. They have the access to the players at, you know, in between the ropes and media as you have at a normal major or a normal tournament. So he's kind of protected in that sense. But again, and people love great golf. People love when athletes perform at a high level, they kind of dismiss everything else that's going on in their lives. So I don't think it's shocking that he doesn't get ripped or doesn't get, heckled down in Augusta. People want to see Tiger Woods play great golf. People want to see Tiger Woods, period. Despite everything that's going on, despite his quote-unquote transgressions, you know, he's still Tiger Woods. And again, he makes right. This is the round that even when he's not playing well in a major or at Augusta, he's struggling. This is where he makes his move in the third round. This is traditionally where he can be a little tough to deal with. And don't think that those players don't know that. Don't think that those players are not aware of the kind of rounds he's had in Augusta, the kind of third rounds he's had in the past. He's had some big ones. But again, I think we're headed towards a Phil Mickelson Tiger Woods showdown, and that would just be great for not only the golf world, but for the sports world in general. Still to come on this latest edition of the Saturday Morning Wake Up Call. We're just getting started here. A certain quarterback got moved in the NFC East within the division. We'll talk about him, and we'll talk about the ramifications of that move. And I'll tell you why it was a great move for my favorite team. We'll talk about that and much, much more still to come on this latest edition of the Saturday Morning Wake Up Call. Masters second round, Ian Poulter and Lee Westwood lead by two strokes through two rounds of the Masters. Poulter and Westwood both have yet to win majors in their careers, seeking their first major. Both of them have shot under 70 in the first two rounds of play. The only players in the field to do so. Trailing right behind them, of course, is Tiger Woods and Phil Mickelson at 600, along with the likes of Anthony Kim and KJ Choi as well. Tiger Woods will tee off at 2:45. Tiger Woods will tee off at 2:35 today. NBA scores: Oklahoma City 96, Phoenix 91. Utah over New Orleans 114-103. San Antonio falls to Memphis 107-99. Cleveland not playing four starters. Loses to Indiana 116-113. Lakers still minus Kobe Bryant. Defeats the Timberwolves 97-88. Orlando crushes New York 118-103. Atlanta over Toronto 107-101. Detroit smashed Miami's nine-game winning streak 106-93. Detroit has won three straight themselves. Washington over Boston 106-96. Milwaukee 95. Philly 90. Other winners in the association included New Jersey and Dallas. Dallas took out Portland 83-77, led by, of course, Dirk Nowitzki's 40 points. The Skins have a new quarterback by the name of Donovan McNabb. McNabb, of course, was traded to Washington last Sunday night as the baseball season was opening. That seemed to coincide with each other. As you see, Yankees Red Sox, and you see breaking news: Donovan McNabb traded to the Redskins, and I couldn't believe it. I could not believe it that the Eagles would move him within the division. I was not shocked by the trade. They moved him get a second round pick this year and get possibly as high as a third round pick for next year, depending on how well McNabb plays. Listen, we saw this coming as far as him being moved. Eagles were trying to move him. Andy Reid came out and basically said it, that we were open to offers, listening to offers. But again, I have to be fair about this. I have to be honest about this, because I didn't make too much of a big deal out of it when it happened. But now, as the course of the week has played out, to move him within the division, I mean, the Eagles are a smart organization. They've made great moves. They know when to get rid of players. They know when to get rid of players when they're about to hit their downside. But they might have missed on this one. And I'm not sure, and I'm not saying so much saying that McNabb has 4 or 5 great years left. I'm not saying that at all. My problem with this move is moving him within the division. Because not only do you weaken yourself, and you weaken your team when you move a Donovan McNabb. I'll get to the Kevin Cobb aspect of it in a second here. But you strengthen one of your division rivals, a team that you had to see 2 times a year, possibly a third time if you both make the playoffs. I mean, the Washington Redskins have went to me right now. I think the Washington Redskins are an 8-18, and they're still. This is before the draft, and this is before training camp starts. You know, they've already added a Hall of Fame coach. Now you've allowed them to add, to me, a future Hall of Fame quarterback. Already had a pretty good defense. You know, they tweaked off of the line, and you have something going in Washington now. As long as the Eagles, I would have moved him. I don't care where you went. I would have moved him to Buffalo or Oakland or whatever. That's your problem. You can't sign him. That's your problem. You wanted to make a move. I'm making a move. Now, did the Redskins give them the most compensation? Yes, but to me, it would have been worth not getting that extra third or fourth round pick to get him out of my division and possibly out of the conference. The thing that I'm surprised about, and you really can't be too surprised, but I'm kind of surprised that McNabb now all of a sudden is the reason why the Eagles didn't win a Super Bowl was holding somehow, based on some of the riders are saying in Philadelphia. Forget about the fans. The fans of Philly are crazy. We know that. And that's Philly. But some of these writers are basically just burying McNabb. He's not a leader. Kevin Cobb's a better fit for the West Coast offense. Kevin Cobb can play. McNabb, I mean, it's amazing. I mean, then you have a Brian Baldinger who used to play for the Eagles, who now does work for the NFL Network, basically saying that McNabb was one of the most overrated quarterbacks in NFL history, and that the Eagles should be ecstatic. Eagle fans should be ecstatic that he's gone. That Andy Reid in Philadelphia, hid his flaws for the last 11 years. Well, let me explain something to Mr. Baldinger. Over the course of McNabb's career, the Eagles, in terms of rushing attempts, in the last 8 years, only one time did they rank in the top 5 in terms of rushing attempts. Only once. And that was the year that McNabb, broke his ankle and had to miss about 6 or 7 games. And you had A.J. Philly playing quarterback, so you had to hide the quarterback and run the ball during that time period, back in 2002. Other than that, the Eagles did nothing but throw the ball. So can Mr. Baldinger explain to me that if you're trying to hide a quarterback, hide his inaccuracy, why you would throw the ball more than any team in the league? Explain that to me. But not like the Eagles, but like the Ravens, who have run the ball more than anyone in the past 2 years. Eagles throw the ball just about every down. I mean, the running game, running the ball might as well be a four-letter word to Andy Reid. He doesn't do it. And before you kill McNabb and say this and that about it, remember the receivers. Remember some of the receivers. These are some of the receivers that he's played with over the course of his career. And this is before he got Deshaun Jackson, Jeremy Maclin, which he only got to play with for 2 years before he's moved. I mean, run this list of names down for you: James Thrash, Fast Freddie Mitchell. Remember the fast part, Freddie Mitchell, not just Freddie Mitchell. Torrance Small, Charles Johnson, Hank Baskett, Jason Avant, Reggie Brown, Dante Stallworth, Kevin Curtis. Just to name a few. Those are some of the guys that he's played with over the course of his career. One time he had an All-Pro, Hall of Fame caliber, Terrell Owens. We know what happened with that. They did make it to the Super Bowl that particular year, in spite of Owens not even playing in the playoffs until they got the Super Bowl, by the way. Got to toss that in there. So, to me, the only criticism that you can have of McNabb would be that he was not accurate. That's the only criticism that you have. Like, that's the only thing that keeps him from being on the same level as a Tom Brady, as a Brett Favre, as a Peyton Manning. But guess what? Those three guys are probably three of the top, right now, 10 quarterbacks of all time. And when they're finished, could be three of the top five or six quarterbacks of all time. So you're going to knock him for not being Tom Brady? Are you kidding me? The guy took the team to five NFC championships. Five. Half the reason why, a big part of the reason why the Eagles did not win a Super Bowl, and again, that's another thing, almost half the teams in the NFL have not won a Super Bowl. Almost half. And I'm not just talking about the expansion teams like Houston, I mean, like Carolina and Jackson. I'm talking Cleveland Browns, Detroit, Buffalo, San Diego. I'm talking about teams of that nature. Cincinnati hasn't won a Super Bowl. St. Louis Rams. But the reason why, one of the biggest reasons why the Eagles have not won the Super Bowl has been, I'll give you two reasons. Number one, Andy Reid's game management. Okay, Andy Reid is an excellent coach, motivating his team, preparing his team. His teams are mentally tough. But his play calling and game management in big spots can be, let's say, suspect. That's what keeps Andy Reid from being a Bill Belichick, you know, Tony Dungy on that level of coach. Still a very good coach. Well, again, I think he will be eventually be in the Hall of Fame. But he holds himself back. And he's no commitment to the running game whatsoever. None. No commitment to the money game. None. And one of the biggest reasons that the Eagles haven't won the Super Bowl is they haven't surrounded McNabb with just enough talent. I mean, think about it. McNabb has carried that offense for his entire career. Yes, Westbrook is a very good player when he's healthy, but mostly Westbrook is more effective as a receiver than he is a running back, because you don't run the football. So McNabb has not had a running game, and he really hasn't had weapons to throw to. Yet you've been in contention more years than not, playoff contention, championship contention throughout the course of the Donovan McNabb era. And you act though as the guy, as you didn't win anything during over the course of his career. So again, Eagles fans are going to find out real quick just how much they're going to miss Donovan McNabb. And as far as Kevin Cobb goes, Kevin Cobb, I saw some good things from Kevin Cobb last year in the two games that you got to get, in the two games that he played. You know, you like something like his poise. He has a good quick release. But did you see enough to call Kevin Cobb the next, this next great quarterback? I mean, the guy played in two games. He played in two games, and he played half a game in 2008 where he got killed against the Baltimore Ravens. Look at the two games he played last year. Last year, he played against New Orleans. They got destroyed in that game. Yes, he threw for 300 yards, but he also had three interceptions. He played great against Kansas City, but, I mean, it's Kansas City. Let's calm down on Kevin Cobb being, Steve Young all of a sudden. You can't tell me you don't know what Kevin Cobb's going to be. You don't know. The Eagles don't know Kevin Cobb's going to be a great quarterback. They're hoping that he turns out to be a great quarterback. These writers in Philadelphia saying he can play. Really? Based on what? Based on mini camp and training camp snaps? I mean, how many snaps did you see of him over the course of the season? Everybody knows that the first string quarterback takes almost all the snaps unless he's injured or doesn't practice. McNabb missed two games last year. So I'll say McNabb probably took about 90% of the snaps even in practice. So we know Kevin Cobb is going to be this big-time quarterback now. Now it's become a snowball fight. Now you got the receivers, Deshaun Jackson, knocking down McNabb. It's one thing. You want to praise McNabb. You want to kiss Kevin Cobb's ass. That's one thing. That's fine. You can do that all you want. But don't forget, you made a Pro Bowl under Don when Don McNabb was throwing you the ball. Don't forget about that. You catch it. How many touchdowns did Deshaun Jackson have of 50 yards or more with Don McNabb throwing him the football? And this is the same guy who dropped the football right before he reached the end zone in a game against Dallas in 2008. So he needs to pipe down. But again, if you are the Redskins, you have to be happy about the move. It's a very good move. The Redskins, you have to make a move. I understand some of the backlash the Redskins are receiving out. Just another Redskin move, making a big splash. First of all, this is not Albert Haynesworth, okay? It's not Albert Haynesworth. The guy still has years he can play. When did 33 become 43? At the quarterback position, 33 is not old at the quarterback position. Maybe old as a running back, wide receiver, offensive lineman, linebacker, but at the quarterback position, a lot of guys come into their own when they reach 30. You look at Kurt Warner, Rich Gannon, Vinny Testaverde. Look what Brett Favre's doing right now. How old is he? He's 40 years old. So it's not crazy at 33 that a guy can still play at a high level. Okay? He's going to have a solid running game. The Redskins, if they can get this offensive line situated, sounds like they're going to try to sign Fonzo Adams. I don't agree with that move, but it's an upgrade. They'll probably draft the guy, O'Connor with the fourth pick, which is smart if they do. And you'll take it from there. So the Redskins are making the right moves, and you have to like it if you're a Redskins fan, the direction that they're headed in. Does it guarantee anything? No. This is the NFL. So we know the championships are not won in April. But again, this is a far cry from the Redskins we've seen in the past. A far cry. So we'll see what happens with that. I'm definitely looking forward to it towards the first time the Eagles and Redskins meet in the regular season. Still to come on this latest edition of the Saturday Morning Wake Up Call, we'll go inside the NBA. LeBron and Kobe missing games. Tell you which one of these teams should be worried about their stars, about their particular star not playing. And also, Manu Ginobili gets paid. And also, I had the ex-wife of a future of one of the all-time greats who wants to get out of his shadow. We'll talk about that and much, much more on this latest edition of the Saturday Morning Wake-Up Call. Ian Poulter and Lee Westwood are co-leaders at the Masters down in Augusta. They both are 8 under. Both of them have shot in the 60s in the first two rounds, but they find themselves being breathed on heavily by the likes of Tiger Woods and Phil Mickelson, who are both 6 under. Poulter and Westwood will pair up, and they will tee off at 2:45. Woods will be right behind them, and will pair up and will tee off at 2:35. NBA scores: Oklahoma City 96, Phoenix 91. Utah crushes New Orleans 114-103. Memphis over San Antonio 107-99. Cleveland, with no LeBron James, no Mo Williams, basically no team, gets defeated by Indiana 116-113 with Mike James, Mike Brown, resting stars, with the best record in the league wrapped up. The Lakers will rest Kobe Bryant for a second straight game and defeat Minnesota 97-88. Orlando 118, the Knicks 103. Atlanta 107, Toronto 101. Detroit snaps Miami's 9-game winning streak with a 106-99 victory. Big game out Ben Gordon, 39 points. Other winners in the association included Dallas, Washington, Milwaukee, New Jersey. Yes, I said New Jersey, and Chicago. No, New Jersey beat Chicago. Let me get that right. I mentioned in the update that LeBron James and Kobe Bryant have not played in back-to-back games now, and It's kind of puzzling. It's not the first time a team has wrapped up home court advantage with a week left or with a couple games left. But I remember the Bulls winning 72 games and being at least, I would say, 12 games better than anybody else in the NBA that particular season. They were probably 9 games ahead of they were 12 games ahead of anybody in the conference. I believe they were about, I think Seattle won 64 games that year, so they're about 8 games ahead of the Supersonics. I don't remember Michael Jordan's guy tended to take it off games, and they were at an advanced age in their particular careers. I think Jordan probably was off 33. Well, not advanced. They were in their 30s. They were older than Kobe and LeBron James, I'll tell you that. It's very strange. I don't remember seeing guys just take off games with 4 or 5 games left, superstar players. This is going to be something that you're going to see from here on out. I mean, this is a trend that is not going away. You saw Steven Jackson get rested for Charlotte yesterday. You're going to see this a lot now once teams get locked into their position. You won't see it in the Western Conference because the race for the number 2 seed. You know, Dallas right now is tied with Denver for that second spot at 52-27. Dallas, of course, has a tiebreaker over Denver. You have, you know, Utah in that 4th spot. Phoenix is in 5th. Oklahoma City is in 6th. Portland is in 7th. San Antonio is in 8th. So you're not going to see it in the Western Conference besides the Lakers. But, again, it's something that you just – I'm not used to seeing. I mean, it is I don't know. It's something different. I'll be a little worried if I'm a Laker fan with regards to Kobe Bryant. Kobe Bryant rested the Denver game despite having 3 days off. The Lakers hadn't played since Sunday. They played at Denver on Thursday night. They had 3 days off to rest. He had 3 full days off, including, and then basically almost 4 days off when you consider the fact that they did not play until 10:30 at night Eastern time against Denver, 10 o'clock at night Eastern time against Denver. Phil Jackson says he has it's his knees, his kind of, forget it's not the finger, but it's, talking about his knees, possibly his ankle. It's a little concerning. If you're a Lakers fan, already announced that Bynum will not play until the playoffs, which is very, another suspect move to bring. I don't know what you're going to expect out of him not playing basically since March, mid-March, and then trying to step directly into the playoffs. I don't know what to expect, but you're going to expect out of him, but he will not see action in the regular season. And Jackson is content with just bringing him back for the playoffs, which will kick took off April 17th, probably for the Lakers, April 18th, as I was expected to play on that next Sunday afternoon on ABC. But, I mean, as far as Cleveland goes, you know, again, LeBron, 25 years old, I understand what Mike Brown did. Mike Brown's taking that as a precaution towards this. This shows you how much pressure Cleveland has on it to win a championship. But it is, because, you know, unlike Kobe, LeBron James physically is in tremendous shape as far as, you know, injuries and what have you. I know he had a minor ankle sprain a couple of weeks ago, which was not major, but it's minor to say the least. But Mike Brown's taking no chances. And you might not see LeBron James for the rest of a regular season. That's definitely a possibility as he looks to get him ready for the playoffs. I don't think it will have a major effect on LeBron. I'm sure he's going at it hard in practice and what have you. But, again, it's a move. Again, it's a very peculiar move that, I mean, you open, if, you know, if somehow LeBron goes out there and doesn't play as well, you open yourself up towards criticism. But, again, Mike Brown certainly is willing to take that risk. I don't think anybody would criticize Mike Brown if LeBron James got hurt in one of these last four or five games. I don't think anybody would say, well, he shouldn't have played in the first place. I really don't. I mean, I think if his minutes were being cut down, if he was only playing 20 or 25 minutes instead of his normal 39, I think people would just say it was part of basketball. But again, Brown is taking no chances with that with LeBron James. Shaquille O'Neal, it sounds like Shaq might, you know, could be back in the first round. Maybe they'll hold him back to the second round. I think you need to try to work him into the first round. I wouldn't want to bring him back in the middle of a playoff run. I wanted him to have games under his belt so that he could get used to playing with Antoine James. Remember, O'Neal was hurt before Jameson was traded. O'Neal was hurt. They might have played a couple games together, but I believe Jameson was already hurt before they got Jameson. So interesting to see some chemistry and how chemistry could be with Jameson, O'Neal, and Ilgauskas in that particular mix. A nice problem to have if you're the Cleveland Cavaliers. San Antonio signs Ginobili to a 3-year, $39 million deal, which to me, I don't know, maybe it's a move out of desperation. I don't understand this move. I know Ginobili's had a big month of March and has played great over the last 5 or 6 weeks, but still, he's 32 years old. He has been injury prone. And he's not a young 32. He's an old 32. He has a lot of wear and tear on his body. You really want to give him 3 years? Well, this contract is up. He'll be 36. He's going to be 33 before the start of next season. I wouldn't have made this move with Ginobili. I would have let Ginobili myself. I would have let him walk. And then looking forward, I would let him walk this year. Tony Parker's going to be a free agent next year. You have to resign Tony Parker. Duncan will be up in 2012. That'll probably be the end of Tim Duncan's career, I would say, come 2012. I mean, I would start rebuilding. I think San Antonio could go a year where they struggle to make the playoffs, but still be back in championship contention the following year with the right move. Remember, 2011, Carmelo Anthony will be a free agent. Okay, so you have to keep that in mind if you're a Spurs fan. Spurs obviously think that they still can make a run at a championship. Maybe not this year. I think they'll be dangerous, but I don't think it's gonna happen this year. But even next year, with Parker, Duncan, and Ginobili, again, 3 years. I'm surprised that the Spurs, as smart as they are as an organization, would go for the bait of Ginobili playing one great month after struggling for most of the season. And again, this guy has been injury prone. Over the last couple of years. I think it's I don't like this move from a Spurs standpoint. But again, he gets 3 years, $39 million. He was waiting for that contract extension all season long. So we'll see what happens with that. Shawnee O'Neal, ex-wife of course, you know, Shaquille O'Neal, is producing and the creator of a new show that's premiering on VH1 called Basketball Wives. What she plans to accomplish in this show, to me, seems still to be a mystery, even after reading the article. Is she gonna show these? Is she gonna show women who are married or are girlfriends of famous athletes how to? I mean, is she gonna show them how to deal with, you know, with money? How to deal with, you know, their husbands, or boyfriends cheating on them? I don't know what she's gonna try to accomplish with this show other than getting her face on television. I really don't. I'll watch the first episode. I'm not going to follow the show throughout the season, but you have to watch the first episode. You have to watch the first episode. I'm intrigued on what this show is going to try to accomplish. I really am. I mean, and, you know, throughout the article, you know, she's talking about being, you know, not being able to do some of the things she wanted to do before she married Shaq. Listen, I'm not knocking her life prior to Shaq, but I would just take a calculated guess that I don't know. I don't think anybody knew her before she married Shaq. Now, I don't think that this show would exist had she not married Shaquille O'Neal. I understand, you know, four kids at home, raising them, despite having endless resources of money and things of that nature. So it's tough. It's not like she's a single mom. I mean, come on now. You married a guy who was one of the most recognizable figures, has been one of the most recognizable figures in the NBA over the last 10 to 15 years, has hundreds of millions of dollars, and now life is just, you know, life is hard. I mean, I understand, you know, fortune and fame isn't, you know, always what it's cracked up to be, but, I mean, she makes it seem like she's just, like, almost a victim of just circumstances. Yeah, I mean, it's almost a sense of, well, what would have happened if I wouldn't have married Shaquille O'Neal? We wouldn't know you. That's what would have happened if you wouldn't married Shaquille O'Neal. You wouldn't have $150 million coming your way once the divorce goes through. I mean, that's what it would have happened if you would have managed to kill O'Neal. Again, I mean, I guess he's trying to give advice to athletes, wives, and again, wives and girlfriends on. I guess I'm dealing with everyday, day-to-day stuff. What it's like to be, you know, giving us a perspective on what it's like to be married to a famous athlete. Other than that, I don't know what the show is going to accomplish. And again, the timing of the show is, you know, coincides with what happened with Tiger Woods, which is, I'm sure, has something to do with the timing of this show. And, I mean, it's what a coincidence that this show comes out like a couple, like, fresh off the Tiger Woods scandal. And now, in the article, it's going to be she's talking about doing an NFL Wives show. She's talking about doing an NFL Wives show. She's talking about starting her own shoe line. All this stuff happens because Shaquille O'Neal's money. All this stuff happens because of Shaquille O'Neal's money. Let's not forget about that before we start making it out to be, you know, this quote-unquote victim. She's going to be set for the rest of her life. She's going to have to work a day in her life. This is playtime for her. Doing shows and producing shows and starting clothing lines and shoe lines and all this stuff. It's playtime. But good for her. She helped raise four kids and had to deal with all the stuff But Shaquille O'Neal, yeah, obviously Shaquille O'Neal in the Kareem Stephens book, and Gilbert Arenas' girlfriend, that whole ordeal. But she's been compensated, well compensated for that. So, again, that's going to be VH1 this Sunday. I'm looking to see if they have a time here. 10 o'clock on VH1. At 10 o'clock, you'll have some of her friends in the who are married to, I believe, all who have been married to current or former basketball players. I think the majority of them are ex-basketball players, or guys who are retired. So that could be an interesting watch. But again, all the stuff she has going for her all comes back to me to Shaquille O'Neal's money. So let's remember that before you start feeling sorry for her. Still to come, as I wrap up this latest edition of the Saturday Morning Wake Up Call, we'll try to get into the rationale and we'll try to explain what really pro day means as far as the NFL goes. I'm kind of confused about it. I'm not confused, but I'm trying to just figure out what it really is. Does it really have a purpose? Does it really serve a purpose? So we'll talk about that, and also the classic on Monday night will wrap up the college basketball season. What a great game. Duke dances again. We'll talk about that and much, much more on this latest edition of the Saturday Morning Wake Up Call, and also why Western Pennsylvania is relieved. We'll be right back. Tiger Woods is right on the heels of possibly another fifth green jacket. He trails Ian Poulter and Lee Westwood by two strokes in the Masters. Woods shot a 70 on his way to going 6 under. Right now he is destroying the par fives. He also is tied with getting the likes of Anthony Kim, Phil Mickelson. Woods will tee off at 2:35. And then Poulter and Westwood will tee off at 2:45 today at the Masters. NBA scores. Oklahoma City gets by Phoenix 96-91. Utah 114. New Orleans 103. San Antonio falls to Memphis 107-99. Cleveland falls to Indiana 116-113. Cleveland missing four starters who are getting rest last night. The Lakers missing Kobe Bryant for a second straight game. Defeat Minnesota 97-88. Orlando crushes New York 118-103. Atlanta 107. Toronto 101. Detroit snaps Miami's 9-game winning streak 106-99. Washington, Milwaukee, and New Jersey were all winners in the association last night. And also Dallas gets by Portland 83-77. Dirk Nowitzki goes 40 points. Portland now finds itself in the number 7 spot, just a half game ahead of the San Antonio Spurs in the race not to face the Los Angeles Lakers. San Antonio is in the A spot as of right now. Before I get to this pro day, Monday is expected to be announced that Ben Roethlisberger will not have charges brought against him for a sexual assault accusation of a 20-year-old back down in Mitchellville, Georgia, Millersville, Georgia. Again, this announcement is not official, but it's expected to be announced on Monday that the district attorney will not bring in charges against Roethlisberger. So it seems like not enough evidence was garnered to bring about charges. And again, Roethlisberger is still facing a lawsuit from the Las Vegas situation with the woman filing a lawsuit against him back in 2008 for that what happened in Las Vegas. So that's a whole separate entity. But as far as the 20-year-old college girl in Millersville, he will likely not face charges for that incident. And again, very fortunate. He's very, very fortunate to get off on this situation. And Pittsburgh, the fans, the organization have to be doing have a sigh of relief that this situation seems to be going away very, very soon, and Boston Bruins can just get on with the business of football. So no Charlie Batch this year in the Steel City. Also this week, you had Jimmy Clausen participating in a pro day, a workout, where he throws passes to uncovered receivers, where he is not being pressured by a 6'5", 320-pound defensive tackle or a 6'3", 280-pound defensive end coming off the edge. And supposedly only two balls were not completed in the pro day. I don't know how many total balls were thrown, but supposedly only two passes were not completed. All things you heard about him, heard about the pro day, that it was good performance, but not great. But again, I don't understand how you can even gauge and can learn anything from a pro day. As in comparison to watching somebody on film. I understand seeing him up close and personal, you're right on the field if you're a scout, coach, or whatever in the NFL. But to me, I mean, if I'm gauging a guy, I want to see him handle a blitz. I want to see him audible, check down. I want to see him in game with game pressure on him. I mean, throwing at a pro day, I mean, what kind of pressure is that compared to a game? I mean, he's not going to have that kind of luxury over the course of a game where he has no rush, where he has no crowd noise. He might have a weak offensive line, a blind rush, a blindside blitzer coming from behind. I mean, all these things cannot be simulated over the course of a pro day. I mean, pro day to me is the most overhyped, overblown event for an NFL player. And it is a big waste of time if you're scouting a player. If you are a scout trying to draft whether it be a quarterback, receiver, running back, or whatever, especially a quarterback. I mean, again, they have film. I'm sure they have watched. If you have an interest in drafting Jimmy Clausen, I'm sure these guys have watched every pass that he's completed throughout the course, every pass, that he's thrown throughout the course of his college career. Everyone. I'm sure they've analyzed every single pass that he's thrown in game situations over the course of his career. That's what you go by. I mean, to me, this pro day is nothing but an event that garners hype and it's a waste. It's one of the biggest waste of time. I mean, the combines. I understand the combines. You want to see guys. You want to see guys. Physical ability, you want to see their athletic ability, you want to see, you want to measure their intelligence and how they handle that kind of pressure. I understand the combine, even though I think the combine is overhyped as well. You can get a better gauge from a combine than you can a pro day. I don't know what you get from a pro day. I would love somebody to explain to me what, the true meaning of a pro day, and what you get from watching a guy throw footballs with no pressure on him in front of scouts and coaches, with uncovered receivers. So again, Clausen. And who knows where Clausen will fall in the draft. He can go as high as number two or number three, number four. I don't see him falling outside the top 15, top 10, top 15. I think think he will be in the top five. But you know, either you love or hate him. I mean, that has been the consensus on him, that there's been no real gray area on his talent or on his, you know, on what he can do. So we'll see where he goes in the next couple of weeks. Of course, the draft's coming up on Thursday night, prime time, for 3 days, Thursday, Friday, and Saturday, and on ESPN. So we'll see what happens with that. Also, on Monday, you had a classic national championship, Duke against his fourth championship for Coach K. Butler, I mean, what can you say about Butler that hasn't already been said? Butler, to me, made this tournament special. They had an opportunity to win. I thought Stevens did a bad job with how he used his timeouts, called one too many, and put his team in a position where he didn't have enough time, where he could have advanced the ball had he had one extra timeout with 3.6 seconds left. Instead, Gordon Hayward still had a chance, still almost made a miraculous 45-foot shot that bounced right off the rim and would have been one of the great endings in college basketball history. As far as drama, that final was great as far as drama and the story. I don't think it's one of the great finals of all time. I've seen better finals. I'm not gonna call it one of the great games, great college finals of all time. I'm not gonna put it up there with 85 Villanova Georgetown or 82 North Carolina Georgetown, or even Arizona Kentucky of 97. Don't think it's quite on that. Or Duke, Duke UConn 99. I mean, that was a great game, high level game, two from the great teams going at it. But as far as the storyline that Butler story, that and the fact that Butler's playing in Indianapolis, it was very exciting going down the stretch. The fact that the game was close, I think people were just happy to see a close game. A lot of these games in the championship recently have been getting away, have been kind of one-sided. So I think people were just excited to see a game that went down to the wire. Matter of fact, you can make a case that the Memphis-Kansas game was better considering the shot that Mario Chalmers hit. So I'm not going to put it up there as being one of the all-time great classics in college basketball history. Was it a classic? Yes. But, and people will be talking about it years from now because of the story of Butler. That's what makes it... That's what enhances this game, is Butler's story. If this was another team in a game when it ended like that, I don't know if it would be that big a deal in the consciousness of the college basketball fans. So again, Duke gets his fourth championship. Coach K joins Adolph Rupp and John Wood as the only coaches in NCAA history to have four more championships. And as far as I'm concerned, Jeffy is the greatest coach of all time. I know Wood has 10 championships, but keep in mind, did not have to play 6 games, and he did not have to worry about guys like Kareem Abdul-Jabbar and Bill Walton leaving after a year or two. Those guys stayed all 4 years, which would not occur. It would not occur in this day and time. So Krzyzewski loses players every year. Think about all the players that he's lost over the course of his career to the NBA early. So I think he's the greatest coach of all time. That's just my opinion, and I'm a North Carolina fan, so take that into consideration. Of course, you had the Masters this weekend. Enjoy that. Tiger Woods seeking a fifth jacket. I have a feeling that come early Sunday evening that Angel Cabrera will be fitting Tiger Woods with his fifth green jacket. Come early Sunday evening, but it should be a great final. Excuse me, a great finish. I'm looking forward to a Mickelson Tiger Woods showdown. We'll see what happens with that. Again, keep in mind that Woods makes his move on Saturdays, so be looking forward to him making a serious move and taking the lead come the third round on Saturday. I will see you soon. So long. Have a great week.